This is Radio Eco Shop with your host, Alex Smith.
Why is the Arctic warming so rapidly, with disappearing sea ice and thawing permafrost? Of course, it is due to increasing greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide and methane. We all know that. But new science shows another unsuspected major cause of Arctic warming, ozone-depleting chemicals. Yes, it's refrigerants like CFCs, and they are still up there, and they're still being illegally produced. That adds a whole new dimension to rapid heating in the Arctic. The surprise comes in a new study by American scientists titled Substantial 20th Century Arctic Warming Caused by Ozone-Depleting Substances. It was published in February 2020 in the journal Nature Climate Change. Dr. Mark R. England is a co-author and our guest on Radio EcoShock from the Scripps Institution of Oceanography in California. Mark England, welcome.
Hi, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Now, I may have this wrong, and I think many of our listeners will start from this perspective. Are you saying that an ozone hole over the Arctic is somehow warming it and reducing the sea ice?
No, that's exactly actually what we're not saying. So while many people think of ozone-depleting substances in terms of the ozone hole, which, you know, it's natural to do, it's in the name, we are talking about them really as really powerful greenhouse gases, really nothing to do with ozone. So what we're saying is that these ozone-depleting substances are just behaving kind of like CO2, like a powerful greenhouse gas, and we don't have to think about what's happening to the ozone levels in the stratosphere.
Could you name one of those chemicals and tell us how much more global warming potential it has than carbon dioxide?
So we're normally talking about CFC-11 and CFC-12. There's lots of different types of CFC-11 type chemicals, but they're about something like 20,000 times more radiatively efficient compared to CO2. So even though there's far fewer of them in the atmosphere, they can be really powerful. So when there's an increase, like there has been since 1950 to about 2000, that's the period which they're increasing, this can have actually a really large effect on the climate system.
Why do ozone-damaging chemicals accumulate at the poles?
So this is the way that the circulation really works. And we're not saying that they have to occur primarily at the poles, but they occur throughout the atmosphere, and they can cause a substantial amount of global warming. But we find in this study that they have outsized effects in the polar regions due to some of the climate feedbacks occurring there. They're not just accumulating in the poles. They can happen throughout the atmosphere.
According to your model runs, how much cooler would the Arctic have been if humans had not released so many tons of ozone-killing substances from, you know, refrigerators and hairsprays and all that?
So in our runs, the Arctic warms, forced by all types of greenhouse gases, by about 1.5 degrees Celsius. Now, if we fix ozone-depleting substances, as in, let's imagine a counterfactual world where ozone-depleting substances haven't increased so rapidly and just stayed fixed in the mid-20th century, well, we'd have got about 0.75 degrees Celsius of Arctic warming. So that's saying Arctic warming would have reduced by about 0.75 degrees Celsius if we hadn't have increased these chemicals so rapidly.
That's almost half by my calculations.
Yeah, so that's about half. So that's why in the title it says substantial fraction of Arctic warming. Now, that's not to say these are more important than CO2. If you did a similar experiment with CO2, you would reduce Arctic warming by about 90%, something like that, if we look at the radiative forcings. And so you could say, you know, you said 90% and 50%, these things don't add up to 100. Well, that's because over this time period, to the best of our knowledge, there's been like a cooling effect from aerosols. And so because you have some cancellation largely between CO2 and aerosols, it can mean that these smaller gases, such as ozone-depleting substances, they can have these really large outsized effects because of that cancellation.
Now, way back in 1975, one of my heroes, V. Ramanathan, published his groundbreaking paper, Greenhouse Effect Due to Chlorofluorocarbons, Climatic Implications. Mark, why did it take another 45 years to realize the big impacts that your team uncovered?
I'm actually not entirely sure. I think we've largely disregarded ozone-depleting substances. And since the Montreal Protocol, where substances like CFCs were heavily regulated, I think we've largely kind of ignored them, even though they've had a very large effect on the climate system. So I think what this paper is trying to do is trying to reframe our thinking and show actually that, you know, over the last 50 years or so, they've had a really large impact. And we're talking about these are purely human-made gases. This is, you know, these are not created naturally. So this is something where we can entirely say that this is due to humans.
And how long do these ozone-depleting substances like CFCs stay active in the atmosphere, and when would you expect their warming impact on the Arctic to become far less significant?
They're long-lasting, which means we started regulating them heavily in the Montreal Protocol in 1987, I think it was. But we had to wait. First, we had to wait for the emissions to slow down, but then there was like a 10-year lag between when the ozone hole started to recover, which was in, I think, roughly about 2000, 2005, because it had to take all this time for the ozone-depleting substances to get into the stratosphere. And that takes some time for it to circulate around the climate system. In terms of when do we think this warming will subside, well, because since the Montreal Protocol, we have been reducing our emissions of CFCs, and we've largely gotten rid of them, apart from recently there has been a spike in emissions, primarily in China, I think. We would expect that actually the Montreal Protocol would have a really big effect in mitigating future climate change, because we've reduced the Arctic warming associated with these ozone-depleting substances.
Following criticism from some scientists, I think, your group reworded some claims in the original paper by publishing an addendum in Nature. What were the problems, Mark?
So I don't think there was any criticism of the actual science. It was more of the framing. And so I think we didn't spend enough time talking about it, comparing it to CO2. So I think a lot of the way it's been framed, as it's been picked up in the news, is that, you know, 50% of Arctic warming is caused by ozone-depleting substances, which means, therefore, maybe that CO2 causes 50%, and so CO2 doesn't have a huge impact. We're trying to reframe it and say we're not debating the dominance of the importance of CO2. No, you know, that's not what we're doing here at all. What we're saying is that when there's this cancellation between CO2 and aerosols, these smaller, less abundant gases can have an important effect. And I think that that addendum was to kind of address some worries that people would take the wrong idea from this paper. Nothing was inaccurate about it or anything like that.
Now, is there anything we can do to reduce the impact of ozone-depleting substances that are already up there in the atmosphere?
I'm not the best person to ask about that. I don't have any specialist knowledge about that. I think the best thing we can do is, so many countries are adopting the Kigali Amendment, which is to do with the replacement gases. So when we phased out CFCs, we then started emitting HFCs, which are slightly less bad in terms of potential greenhouse warming, but they can still cause global warming. So we've got rid of these one chemicals, which were bad and they caused for the ozone hole, and now we found they've had this important global warming effect. But we've started using HFCs instead. So the Kigali Amendment is about trying to heavily regulate the future use of HFCs, these replacement gases. So I think that's the best thing we can do, is trying to move forward with the Kigali Amendment.
Of course, this makes me wonder if those HFCs will also accumulate in the Arctic and start warming things up there.
You know, I think that would be definitely an area of future study, because it's, you know, once we start worrying about these smaller gases that the effects of it can have, you know, I think HFCs would definitely be the next place to look.
Well, right. You're also studying the impacts of declining Antarctic sea ice in recent years, and that isn't widely known. What are you finding?
Yeah, so we're going all the way to the other pole, but that's another area which I'm really excited about. And that is, there's been a lot of interest in the effects of Arctic sea ice loss, because, you know, that's been declining rapidly over the last 50 years. But what we find to do with Antarctic sea ice loss, and this is mostly to do with projected Antarctic sea ice loss, because all of the climate models, they project substantial declines in Antarctic sea ice extent. We're finding they can have important global effects, and it can be really important for the Southern Hemisphere eddy-driven jet, and it can have important impacts which reach into the tropics and, you know, it has this global warming signal actually associated with it. So I think we're trying to reframe how people think about sea ice loss. And you know, 90% of the community is rightly worried about Arctic sea ice loss, but we're also trying to say that the future Antarctic sea ice loss will also have an important impact on the climate system.
Well, I did talk to a scientist about that this year, and she said that the Antarctic sea ice was actually growing until about 2014 and then went through a much faster, more precipitous decline than happened in the Arctic, but that didn't get much press. A huge amount of Antarctic sea ice was lost. And here's what's puzzling me. I mean, we were talking about the ozone and the ozone hole, and there's been an ozone hole over Antarctica for decades. There has to be lots of ozone-depleting chemicals piled up there over the South Pole. Why have they not stimulated warming similar to what you found in the Arctic, or have they?
Yeah, we weren't looking specifically at the Antarctic for this study, but that's really been an open question for a long time, which has provoked a lot of debate about why hasn't the Antarctic been warming to the same extent that the Arctic has been warming. I'm not sure I have good answers for that. So in climate models, they'll generally give more Arctic warming than Antarctic warming. This is a general feature that seems to be robust across different climate model simulations. In terms of do I think that ozone-depleting substances would likely have an effect on the Antarctic, I see no reason why they wouldn't. But I think we would definitely need to study that further. And that decline you were talking about, the recent decline in, I think it was 2015, in the Antarctic sea ice extent, yeah, this was a really rapid decline. I think it was about 3 sigma different from the variability of a year-to-year variability of Antarctic sea ice extent. So I think that has piqued people's interest, if you get what I'm saying, about Antarctic sea ice. But whether it's, you know, whether there's going to be a continued decline from 2015, I think it's very hard to say. We'd have to wait a few more years to see if these record lows that have been seen in the Antarctic are going to continue.
When it comes to the dramatic changes in the Arctic, our original topic here about your new paper, what should we in the public take away from your new research?
So I think overall it's a good news story because this is one area of climate change where we have managed to come together as an international community and regulate these gases in the Montreal Protocol in 1987. And this is an example of where climate regulation will have a significant and positive impact on the climate system. So it will have prevented warming in the future. Another way of saying that is without this Montreal Protocol, the warming in the future would have been even more substantial. So I think it's a really good news story, and I think the climate community, we have a lot more to do on recognizing the benefits of the Montreal Protocol. You know, we've really had one big win in terms of international regulation, and we should be doing more investigations about it to see what the potential benefits of it are.
We have been speaking with Dr. Mark England, a climate scientist at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography in California. He is co-author of the new paper, Substantial 20th Century Arctic Warming Caused by Ozone-Depleting Substances. You can find links to the paper and much more in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org, and you can find Mark at his website, markrossengland.com. I'm Alex Smith reporting.
If you have a story idea or thoughts on something you've heard, contact us, radio@ecoshock.org. That's radio@ecoshock.org.